Hey, I'm Alan McGuire.
I'm Sarah Griffin.
I'm Andrea Cleary.
And this is Juvenilia, a podcast where we usually talk about an interesting bit of pop culture that was important to us then when we were young. But we decided to switch it up a little bit because we never get all three of us on the same episode. So
yeah, it's a hat trick.
What do we do? How do we make that happen? So what we're going to do is we're each going to do a bit of a show and tell to each other about a thing we're pretty sure the others don't know about that we think they should know about. So Sarah, please start us off. And what have you brought to us?
So I have an actual object to show you to illustrate something that has recently entered my life and means a great deal to me. So as is my new personality, I was in Japan recently and we went to see a historical building in Osaka, which was very nice. It was Emperor's Palace. Very nice. We looked at it and then we were like, we sure have seen it. Let's go and look in this pavilion next door and see if there is something interesting, like a weird gift shop or a cup of coffee or something in here. And we came upon a miniatures museum. And I was like, well, we're obviously going to go in and look at the guys, look at the little guys. So moseying around the miniatures museum, I kept seeing this little statue everywhere. Like, it didn't seem like it was from a anime. It didn't seem like it was from a movie. It didn't seem like it was from pop culture at large. It was just this little guy. I will show you him in a minute. Because I don't find him very easy to describe. And I think that's part of the power of this thing. Anyway, so I keep moseying around the museum and I'm kind of looking at this guy that I keep seeing everywhere. I'm like, hey, what? Like, I'm sort of taken with it. I'm like, this is, I've never seen anything that looks like this before. Like, and I'm kind of using Google Translate to try and see if I can get its name. And I can't, none of the displays have its name on it. But I do see that there is, it's next to, in a couple of the cases, another figurine of a human man and the name Taro, T-A-R-O, is under it. I was like, huh, okay. So that must be the designer of this little guy. So in the gift shop, I then come across this. So this is what the outside of the box looks like. It's a large white box. Well, large, it's like a cereal box sized white box.
We will put this up on Twitter for everybody as well.
Cool.
So they'll know.
I'll send you pictures of it so that you don't have to look at me in my current garbage face state. So yeah, it's like a cereal box size box and I'm going to open it up because it's got like a little, it's like a doll box almost. So this is the guy.
There he is.
And he's sort of a white guy that is a bit like a bird, I think, with a long neck.
I think white guy, we might need to be a bit more specific.
Oh, like literally if you say white
guy,
white.
You might like picture like Alan.
Yeah, like it's just a, it's a white thing.
Sort of
bird. And it has a gold face.
I think he's kind of tree-like.
A bit like a tree, a bit like a penguin maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is why I liked it so much. Because I was like, I don't know what this is. And it has a face that is gold. Like a gold mask on its, up at the top of its neck. And then on its belly, it has another little face. But I, what I couldn't see at the time when I first picked it up was that on its back, it has another face, which is this kind of spooky, like dark blue sun on its back. Anyway, totally bet into it and then got a translation of exactly what it was. So it's called the Tower of the Sun. And it's made by a Japanese artist who was born in 1911 called Taro Akamado, and was one of the kind of modernists. And this sculpture was built in 1970 and is enormous. And you can walk around inside it, can't you, Weaver? Weaver's just screaming at the cat. You walk around inside it. It was built for the World Expo in 1970, which in this big park, which just so happened to be right outside Osaka. So we were like, how about we fuck our plans for tomorrow out and we get on a train and we go and visit the Tower of the Sun the following day. And it was, I'm still kind of trying to work out what it did to me, but it did something very profound to my brain chemistry. And going inside it, it's like the inside of the body of the tower. In terms of scale, I would say about as tall as like Jervis Street
shopping
center, maybe taller.
absolutely love how you use shopping centers for shopping scale. Centers. Extremely on brand.
Right. Like, yeah, but it's about that size. And you can go, yeah, you go inside it and you enter its womb, which is like this red, ooh, space that has a golden mask inside it. So it has four faces. The big face, the big golden face on the top is the future. The face on the belly is the present. And the face at the back is the past. But the face inside it, in its sort of like gut space, is like the deep, mysterious past. And then when you go into the central chamber, which is the body of the tower, there's like this huge sculpture of like a wiggly spinal cord that goes all the way up these big flights of stairs. And along it, there are these sculptures of amoeba and like then fish and like all the kind of the history of life on Earth, and goes all the way up to the top to this thing's head. And its arms are these mad long psychedelic chambers as well. And I came out of there a different person completely. And I recognize this all sounds a bit nuts. I'm still trying to work out what it did to me. This artist, Taro Kamado, his house is in Tokyo. So when we got back to Tokyo at the end of our trip, we went to visit his house. And it turns out that he had been like drawing iterations of the Tower of the Sun for years and years. And he did like hundreds of these paintings of these faces over his lifetime. And it kind of culminated in this huge monumental statue. And he's done some installation work. There's some big mosaics and paintings and things like that around Japan. His visual style is really, it's very hard to describe in language because I just don't think I've ever seen anything like it. It's very bold. It's not simple. It is and it isn't simple, but it's really impactful and really, it's very hard when you see a new piece of art for the first time that kind of just gets under your skin and you're like, oh no, this is my personality now. So I've kind of been trying to work it out for the last month or so since I got home, to be like, how do I incorporate this guy into my own work and my own kind of,
what do you think life? It was when you first saw like the little miniature that like attracted you to him or her? I don't know if it,
yeah, gender, I call him a different pronoun whenever I think of him. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I just had never seen anything like it, and I think it's so uncommon in a world where we're so saturated by image and reproduction of image, and reproduction of iconic imagery. Like, we see the same shit over and over and over again. You can kind of become creatively desensitized. So everything looks the same. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so that when you see something that you have simply never seen before, or a like when you see a shape that you like that you're not familiar with, see how nuts this sounds? I don't know. I feel like it was just like seeing something completely new.
Because it kind of looks like, it looks like a swallow in flight from above, but also a penguin,
yes,
standing up. And also,
but also
an
a guy,
god, and also an Antarctic tree, and also, yeah.
Yeah, right. It looks like all these things that you simply never consider. And it's also kind of cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also kind of charming.
Like, it could be like an old god, or it could be a Studio Ghibli thing you just haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the lightning bolts on its side are really cute as well.
Mm. His arms are what's cute to me, I think. He's kind of very proud. And
yeah.
Kind of proud.
Like, he's brilliant.
He's beautiful.
He is beautiful. And like, he's different now than he was in 1970. There used to be like a structure around him. Like, millions of people visited him that year. And he was just like, the whole park obviously was dedicated to like, it's a bit like the World's Fair, like dedicated to all these innovations. But now it's just kind of like a big public park and there's swan boats. And he's just kind of standing there in this field.
Mm.
Just on his own. And it was the only place that we visited, kind of touristy place. I don't think it's not that touristy. We didn't see any other white people, you know? Mm. And I was like, I feel like people should go and see this guy, you know? Like, the Emperor's Palace is fine, but like, this guy, when you get off the train station, which is kind of like a 10-minute walk away, you can see him like over the freeway and above the trees, this like golden face. Like, it's on this long neck. It's so, I don't know. So that's where I am with it. I bought a DVD in the gift shop of Taro Akamado's house, which is a documentary about it, which I have been kind of saving for a rainy day, because there's so little written about him in the West at all. And there's so little written about the Terror of the Sun at all in the West, because I guess it's kind of a curio, but it feels like it should be more than that. That it's very hard to access any information on it. So this little DVD feels to me like it's the only kind of intel I have, because all the books are fucking not written at all in English, and no more should they be. But it just means that my curiosity is stumped. At a certain point, because I can't read. So that's my show and tell. That's my guy. It's my new little guy.
It's beautiful.
I like continued. That there's like stuff you can't know about so easily as well though.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
It feels old.
It feels old. Yeah. Weird vibe.
I wonder if there's a Japanese podcast right now where someone's talking about the Nace Ball.
That's basically the same. I feel like it's treated with the same kind of regard, you know. Like this just weird thing out here. The museum was very nice. Like, you do get the tour is very moving. You know, I bring your phones in unless you pay extra to bring your phones. Of course I did. But then I was like, I don't really want to show anyone pictures of this. I'll show pictures of the outside. But the inside felt kind of, I don't know. Like something.
I think sometimes it's nice to have a bit of a language barrier between you and something that you're looking at. Like, I was in India earlier this year and I encountered a lot of stuff that it was difficult for me to immediately find out what it was. And that's quite nice. It was nice.
It is.
Yeah.
It's resonant.
Yeah, it's nice to not have, like, I mean, like you were saying about like the reproducibility of like art and images and the kind of the way that we are dealing with that at the minute. It is also nice to not have like all of the information about the history of the thing and the person that made the thing and the context around the thing, like immediately. Like, it's nice to have it maybe, you know, like you with the DVD, like in a bit, like, because then you get to experience it in a new way. You don't just experience it in every way you can immediately and then it's kind of gone, you know. I think so.
Exactly.
I think that's nice. Yeah,
there's no way of oversaturating myself with this, because I think it's my thing that I saw, and it's very hard. There aren't really any pictures. There are some pictures of it online, but not lots, and it's not like a meme. It's not like a thing that people are talking about. It feels like private. So that's why it's nice to talk about it in this context, because it's like, this is a thing that this is a funny little art journey that I seem to be going on with this thing I saw. And I wish I had more facts about it, but I simply don't. Other than it kind of recalibrated my brain a bit. And
I think that's lovely.
That's my show and tell. Who's next?
It's beautiful. Oh, thank you for showing and telling.
Thank you for listening to me.
That was great. Thank you. So what I brought is a Terry Pratchett series that is not Discworld. If you listen to our Discworld episode, you know I am a huge, huge Discworld fan and Terry Pratchett in general. Because the multiverse is like a big thing at the moment in pop culture, I thought people might like to know about his series with Stephen Baxter called The Long Earth. So Stephen Baxter is like a hard sci-fi guy. He's one of those guys who writes like, you know, 52 novellas about like the same shared universe kind of guy, and it's all based on hard science. So him and Terry Pratchett got together to focus on this idea of what if there's just a chain of Earths, like just parallel Earths, just, and we're like essentially like, you just pick a point and we're the center, and then either side of that there's this very slight variations fanning out from either side of our Earth, and if somehow you could access those, that'd be amazing. So in the universe of this book, someone figures out how to do it and uploads the like schematics for a little box called a stepper, and then disappears. And it's a very simple box, and you press left and you move one parallel universe to the left, you press right, you go one to the right. And they call it West and East, is how to describe it. And it basically, there's very little plot in these books, just five of them, and it really just explores all the what ifs of that being a thing, which I love. I read them, they came out 2012 to 2016, And rereading the summaries today, I realize most of what I remember from them are from the first two books. But it's one of those things where it sets up a couple of very simple rules immediately. Like, you can step left, you can step right. Weirdly, like, it's like one of the things that always stuck to me from that book is that just by coincidence, people from like Europe and America tended to step west, and people from Asia tended to step right or step east. Mm-hmm. And just it naturally fans out that way. And so humanity starts fanning out across these long earths.
Oh, that's so cool. And, that's cool.
But also iron can't travel. So you need to find ways around that. So in the first book, there's this
supplements? Guy
called Josh. You do feel sick when you do it.
That's iron.
Yeah, yeah. But there's some people who are natural.
What a weird rule to put in your book that you've done to yourself. And then it's you so you have can't to just get like, around trans- it.
It's so you can't transfer like your like mining equipment and then start extracting in this new world. You need to build up from scratch in each one. So there's people called natural steppers who were always able to do it before the box, who didn't realize that, but it only happened if they were like in a moment of extreme stress. Like the book starts with a guy in 1914 in France suddenly waking up and the war is not around him anymore. And he's like, what? I just got shelled. Where am I? And stuff like that. So the main guy in this is a guy called Joshua, who's one of these people. And he is an extreme loner. He doesn't feel sick when he does it. So he goes and hangs out in like 1,000 earths west and like goes camping 1,000 earths away. And he gets called in by this, again, weirdly enough, AI, very on trend right now as well. An AI called Lobsang, who claims to be the reincarnated spirit of a Tibetan motorcycle engineer.
Oh, and they cannot, I was hoping you were going to say motorcycle.
There was a pause after the word motorcycle.
I was like, wow. I
remember the word for engineer, yeah. obviously, they can prove that he isn't, and that's how he like he becomes the first legally sentient AI, because they cannot prove that he isn't this reincarnated spirit of a Tibetan motorcycle engineer. That they bring over one of his friends, and he has a conversation with him, and is like, no, that's him. That's my friend. So they build... because they don't have iron, so they can't do planes, they build dirigibles and like steampunk airships and stuff. And they're like going on a voyage out to like 1,000,000 worlds out, because he's an AI, so he doesn't get sick and Joshua doesn't get sick either. And they just encounter worlds and worlds and worlds and worlds and worlds through this. And all like the thing with these worlds is Homo sapiens is only on this one. That's it. It's the only one where they evolved. There's other lower... like Homo habilis and stuff, and there's like a world where dogs are dominant ones, or like where dinosaurs kept going, or and it's just I love the lack of plot in it. It's just like, oh, how would this work? Like, there's one world where Earth was destroyed, so you're stepping, 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 and suddenly you're in space and you're dying and you need to step out of it very quickly because there's no Earth there. But then they realize, well, if we like build a space shuttle beside it and then just step it over, suddenly you're in space without needing to get a ship into space.
Like a Stargate.
Yeah, so NASA just like set up there on the world, the ones either side of that.
Incredible. Like that.
It's just, it's got, it really does feel like it just like teases at every single corner of an idea. And I love that. I love...
A mosey, a meander.
A mosey, yeah. They're really like comfortable books, even though like there is some dark stuff, like people who can't step, like are left behind on the original Earth, and like Yellowstone erupts and that Earth becomes pretty uninhabitable and they like form terrorist groups and stuff. And it doesn't really shy away from that, but also it's just about exploring. It's about pioneers. Like you get all these like groups of people setting off to like find their own Earth that's their one, and like setting up towns and stuff. Mm. I just find that a really comforting read.
Yeah.
Because the stakes, they don't really matter. Because again, it's set over like, the five books set over like 50, 60 years as well. So like, even though a nuclear bomb was off the end of the first one, you're 10 years after that. But the second one, you know, it doesn't really matter. And yeah, I just think they're good. They're nice. I like them.
Is there an audio of it?
Awesome.
I assume so. Yeah, there is for most of Terry Pratchett stuff.
That sounds like a really cozy listen.
And this is co-written with somebody, is it?
Co-written with Stephen Baxter, yeah.
I don't know.
So they came up with the idea together, and then it was after Terry Pratchett got sick, so the final one came out after he died. It was actually the last, very last original published book after he died was the final one of this. Yeah.
I've never read a Terry Pratchett book.
Any at all?
No. Ooh. I think I tried the first Discworld before, and I couldn't get into it, but I think that was a me thing.
That's also the wrong place to start.
Is it?
There's graphs. We can go through it.
Okay.
We can figure out where to start. Yeah, don't worry.
Okay. Because yeah. I would, because he sounds like very whimsical and funny and smart and clever and all of those things that I like in writers.
He's like the smartest moral writer I've ever come across. I think like essentially all my morals come from Terry Pratchett books and like the lessons in those books and how I think about things.
And like that his Dark Materials novels. Like if it's in like that trilogy or the two books of the Book of Dust trilogy, I'm like, yeah, I believe that. These are my ethics.
Yeah, yeah.
If Philip Pullman says it's so, then it's so. That's great. Awesome.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, where should one start though? Okay, can I start with these books?
Well, these aren't Discworld, so I wouldn't start.
Are just like Terry Pratchett, but not Discworld. I can just pick these up as their own thing.
Yeah. I would start with Mort for Discworld.
Okay. Mort was the first one I read.
Caroline, my wife, is always saying it's the first one she read. Yeah. So, Mort is the first. It's the fourth book, but it's the first Discworld book. He's really finding his feet and kind of playing with parody before that of fantasy stuff, and then Discworld kind of locks into focus in the fourth one, and then it is Discworld from there on. Yeah,
I googled him, and he's a tiny creature from the movie Madagascar. So I'll put in more keywords in my search.
Mort is about death taking an apprentice, so that's what it's about.
Okay.
That's also about timelines and stuff. Yeah.
How does it work that you should start with the fourth one? Should you just not read the first three, or
you come back to them? But they introduce some characters, but they're not like, it's not like one very like big long story like Game of Thrones.
Okay.
It's like there's like sub series within them, standalone ones, and like stuff characters cross in and out. But it's not like one big Discworld story. It's just like a world where all these stories take place.
Okay. I will consult a chart. Thank you.
Yeah. There's actually people have gone into a lot of effort to make very good charts for this kind of thing. People are very enthusiastic about getting Discworld into people's hands.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, Andrea, what have you brought?
I have brought to all of you, I don't know, Barbie came out, obviously, and Ryan Gosling has a big song in it. And it made me think, I haven't listened to Ryan Gosling's cool, like, folk doo-wop horror band Dead Man's Bones in a while. and also, like, I reckon in my life I have met maybe two people who know this band. And, like, that's not in a, like, I'm very cool. I'm like, more people should know them. Like, got a 7.1 on Pitchfork for their one and only album. Like, they were praised. They were, you know, celebrated by critics. But for some reason, it just never, like, I know diehard Ryan Gosling fans who do not know that he had this band. So I just want to put it in the world. I just want people who are on that vibe at the minute, especially a Ryan Gosling singing vibe. If you've been listening to the Ken song, this is better and you should listen to this as well as or instead of that song. So basically, Dead Man's Bones is Ryan Gosling in the, he has a band like persona. His name in the band is Baby Goose, obviously. And Zach Shields, who is also a musician. And it's those two collaborating with the Silver Lake Conservatory Children's Choir, which was set up by Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and is quite like a renowned like children's choir in the US. And they both met I think when they were young, I can't remember when they met, but they were pals anyway, and they bonded Ryan and Zach over their mutual love of what was the Haunted Mansion ride at Disneyland? I don't know. You're both probably.
I went on it for the first time last year. I absolutely loved the Haunted
Mansion. I was on it last month. Yes, it's a whole world. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. I had to Google it. I'm not familiar with it.
No, but they were both fucking Disney adults. Is not. I'm not.
I'm just not. Freaks. I think I'm going to Disneyland next year, and I need both of you to write me like a list of things to do while I'm there, because I don't understand. I love the Disney movies, but the Disneyland, I've no.
Yeah,
idea
I like
what
the park
expect.
More than the movies. So
like I don't know what to expect. So I googled it and it looks awesome. But they were both obsessed with it as children. But also, they were both like deeply, deeply terrified of ghosts as children. And Ryan Gosling's family like moved house when he was a child because they thought that his house was haunted. Which I thought was very
That's
sweet.
Very interesting. And, That's very interesting. Yeah.
It's like, and he doesn't, it's like, where's all that spookiness going, Ryan, in your acting career? Here's where it's going. Dead Man's Bones, self-titled album, 2009. So it's like, it's a lot of organs. It's the children's choir. It's Ryan Gosling singing like quite low, like quite deep, like very down here. His voice is beautiful, but it's beautiful in a different way to how it's beautiful in like La La Land and Blue Valentine, where I think it's like particularly beautiful in that film. But on this, it's just like he's just being this sort of like spooky band leader. He reminds me of, remember Alan, we on the Hocus Pocus episode, we were talking about the band guy on the stage.
Yeah, the singer in Hocus Pocus. Yeah, yeah.
He's kind of like, to me, he's kind of that character in Hocus Pocus. He's kind of this like band leader who is, you know, in charge of this collection of like children ghosts, who are all singing about like creeping into people's rooms while they're asleep and like just like singing really like creepy lyrics, but while being children and while like clearly audibly having a lot of fun as well. And like it sounds so great. So the two guys play all of the instruments on the album, so they don't have a band, it's just them. They have a band for live shows, but for the studio album, it was just them. And they also play the instruments that like they didn't know how to play. So there's a real kind of like rough around the edgesness to it, which is really nice and appealing.
Not what you'd expect from a Hollywood star's
like
album.
The complete opposite to what you expect.
God, I love a passion project. I really do.
It is. That's exactly what it is. It has passion project all over it. Like they limited themselves to 3 takes for every part so that it wouldn't sound like too polished or anything like that. What was the other weird thing they did with it? They did like, I had like 3 things in my head that I can't remember the third thing. But like, so one of the songs was in The Conjuring, the 2013 film, The Conjuring, which I love. But beyond that, it's kind of like absent from like pop culture. And I don't know, I just, and yeah, so it came out like around Halloween, I think early in October in 2009. So it had maybe a little bit of like him at this time. What are we talking Notebook? Let's see.
2013, are we into Drive by then? No.
No, we're pre-Drive. So the Notebook's 2004. So we're still talking kind of like feminist Ryan Gosling memes, like the Hey Girl memes.
And the Ryan Gosling wanted a cereal was around then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like he's liked by the indie people who watched Blue Valentine and thought he was great in that. He's liked by the people who, you know, thought he was a heartthrob in The Notebook. Like he has a lot of appeal, but he still has a bit of kind of like indie cred, and he's still kind of like, The Notebook was his only like big, huge film, so he still has that little bit of like, ooh, what's this guy going to do?
Drive and Crazy Stupid Love are both 2011, so.
Okay, yeah, so like right after. And yeah, and it came out and it maybe had like a bit of like a novelty, like, oh, you know, the guy from The Notebook has written a Halloween album, which, like, to me is the single most interesting sentence you could say to me about anybody. I'm like, hell yeah, like, count me in, any kind of Halloween album, like, I'm there, let alone the guy from The Notebook. But like, he's not, you know, he's not Ryan Gosling yet. And he doesn't treat this as a way to like get into music. It's just one album, one and done. It was a passion project. They did it. They toured it. Whenever they were in a different city touring, they got a local kids choir to like come and play that gig with them. Yeah. And then like the kids choir would do like a talent show that night at the gig as well. And they'd like invite people up to do a talent show. And it's like, there's like a really short kind of maybe 20 minute long documentary, I think made by Pitchfork, that's on YouTube, about the band. And it kind of follows them while they're getting set up for one of their performances. And like, Ryan Gosling's just like a guy, like in a band, like, you know, guys in bands, that's him. And he's like introducing himself to like all the kids, just like, oh, hi, I'm Ryan. Well, yeah, let's get this. And like, it's like him and the other guy, Zach, just like setting up like the stage. Like, they don't really seem to have roadies. They're like, there's this woman who's talking to the choir and she's like very, very kind of like serious, but like teacher serious. She's like, okay, guys, we want you to have fun. We're going to paint your faces like skeletons. These are going to be your skeleton costumes. They're not going to fit you properly, but it's okay. We just want you to have a good time. It's going to be loose. And then all the kids are like, okay. And then they're great and they nail it and they smash it. And it's just like, it's like a really cute, like indie movie, but real and also starring Ryan Gosling. I don't know. It's beautiful. And then like the album itself is like, it's just got so many like really beautiful melodies. The kids are amazing on it. They're not overdone. It's not like they're not a gimmick. They feel like they belong in the world of it. Like, there's, you know, cool like harmoniums and organs. Ryan Gosling plays the guitar really well. There's a beautiful song that's not on the album. That's called Name in Stone, and there's a lovely video of them performing it in a graveyard, all together, just walking through this graveyard. It's filmed on like black and white film, like handheld film, and like, you know, it cuts out sometimes and the sound isn't great, and it's just this completely gorgeous like piece of footage that I would recommend people looking up. It's beautiful. But the album overall is just absolutely gorgeous. And there's a couple of like bangers on it. Like, there's a song called Papa Power, which is like it's like an indie pop song basically, but with, you know, spooky children's choir. There's a great song called In the Room Where You Sleep, which is also like kind of like organ power pop. Not power pop, but like, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to describe, but like, imagine, you know, spooky doo-wop music, and that's what it is. It's gorgeous. Yeah, it's really, really great. And it's only like, what is it? It's 12 songs. Like, it's perfect. I love a 12 song album.
That's a respectful track length. The cat hovering around is incredible, by the way, Andrea. We have a special guest.
Fucking nuts. I'm sorry if anyone could hear her like purring like crazy on the mic while Sarah ASMR. Was talking about the tower. But
she knows. She knows.
She is up there with Matty. But yeah, they're amazing, and I have been holding out for them to like, I don't even know if I need another album. I think we're past it. Like, if they did another album, it would be a whole thing. Like, he's an A-lister now. It would be different. It would be a different feeling. But I love that it's there and it exists, and the people that know about it really, really love it. Like, I'd say if you're a fan of like the Decemberists, you'd love this. Who are great, and especially their concept album, because this is a concept album, I think. Like, yeah, it's not, I don't think there's like a story running through it necessarily, but the concept is present. But that Decemberist album, is it The Crane Wife, or the song on it called? That concept album, if you like that, you'll love this. If you like Halloween, If you like spooky stuff, you'll love it. And if you like Ryan Gosling, you'll like it. Like, it's it was also a really good era for him, just like in terms of being an attractive man in a band. So if you like Ryan Gosling because you fancy him, also look him up in this band because he's great. So yeah, that's my show and tell. That's Dead Man's Bones.
Deadly. That it's sounds exactly awesome. Like it's hitting the full Venn diagram of my interests.
Yeah, yeah, you'll love it. It's really, really, really beautiful. Tell me how you get on if you listen to it.
I will. I'll give you a full report. I was, like, that sounds
bombarding
incredible.
My friend today, like, because we were texting about Barbie and we were talking about the Ken song, and I was like, Denise, do you know about Dead Man's Bones? And she's like, no. And I was like, right, it's Ryan Gosling's like horror folk band from 2009. That made like one album, and she was like, it's just reminding me of this. And then she sent me the image of Jason Segel's character from Forgetting Sarah Marshall doing his like puppet opera. And I was like, okay, first of all, excellent. And second of all, I'm not going to say it's not like that, because I also think those songs fucking bang, but it's different. It's maybe a little bit more serious. But I do love those songs in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
They're amazing.
Yeah,
and I think we should get every former Musketeer to do an indie pop album based on a Disneyland ride.
Yeah, I think that's important. Yeah.
We need Britney Spears' Splash Mountain. We need Christina Aguilera's Tiki
Pirates
Room.
Of the Caribbean. Something.
Yeah. Dead Man's Bones does sound like a band in Pirates of the Caribbean.
It does. Cool. Yeah. Pirates of the Caribbean is a long ride, I'll tell you that much.
It is.
Yeah, it's not chill.
Yeah.
It's the only ride apart from Space Mountain that I know. And now this one, what is it? Mickey's Horror House, what's it called?
Haunted Mansion. Mickey's House of Pain and Distress. Fuck up. Better name though,
what's,
I think,
what's haunting
so far.
The mansion? Are there ghosts?
Three guys. Three fucking guys, mostly. Three guys.
Really?
Three students. They're hitchhikers. Yeah, little freaks.
Oh, God.
Yeah, three dudes. That's
terrifying.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of bullshit going on there. It's very dramatic.
Okay. But Mickey's not there.
No, not a lot of house. Not a lot of
mythology entirely. And okay. In the, I don't know if the Euro Disney was the same. The Disney World one has a ballroom that you look down on where all the ghosts are dancing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're animatronics. But they're also like see-through. Yeah.
They're animatronic. Wait, hang on. Like little animatronics.
It's quite literally done with smoke and mirrors.
And they're see-through.
It's mad looking.
Our ride broke down at that point, so we were stuck watching them for like a minute and a half. It never stopped seeming real.
Yeah.
Oh my
That's
God.
How good the effect is. It's
I love animatronics.
An amazing ride.
Man.
Yeah.
I went on the Beauty and the Beast ride in the Disney in Tokyo, and it was just cried for the whole thing. Love weird robots. Just like I'm in a giant teacup crying. Just crying.
I like that. I like the kind of like my only sort of frame of reference for it is like Itchy and Scratchy Land, or like, you know, the Duff Beer,
which is based on
all
fucking,
that shit.
It's a Small World.
What's
which
it called?
Is also
it's a Small World,
weirdly moving. Weirdly
and
moving.
I like
what it is.
How those robots move. I like the.
I also love like the splendor of the large. You know.
Yeah.
So
oh,
I feel
I'm afraid of the large.
Oh, we talked about this, haven't we?
Yeah, afraid of
I
that
love
big
it.
Jesus in Rio. I will never
too big.
Visit him.
I love too big.
I don't mind
YouTube
big.
Essay about too big.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind big if it's like a mountain or even a building. But
oh,
if it's a
Mammy
guy,
big.
I'm like,
yeah, I love it.
I don't know about that guy. What if he just makes me think of Godzilla?
Comes to life, says hello. Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What if he just looks? What if he just does that? Like,
well, the Terror of the Sun might look at you. I'm going to go write a folk horror concept album about him. That's what I'm going to do.
Please do, for the love of God. Please do. But
this
also, he's only the size of
Terror
Jervis.
Of
so, like,
yeah, so
I'm okay with
I still
that.
Might get a bit of the freaky scale off. But there is a YouTube essay I watched about scale recently. I think it might be called Scale. I'll find it. That's very bad listening. I'm so sorry. I haven't got a direct link, listeners. But about things being too big, human-made things, art things that are too big, and why we kind of feel how we do about them.
Yeah. It's unease for
very
me.
Good.
It's like, it's, I don't know about this.
Don't know about that.
Right. Because we are this size. How did we make that, which is that size, you know?
Too many.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, if you find that essay, please send it to me because I'd be interested.
I will. Think about it.
Understand myself better.
Yeah. All right. Well, my headphones have just said they're not critical. Oh.
All right.
Great.
And music just started out of nowhere. Can you guys hear my headphone music?
No.
Something is happening. Oh, a song called Frog on the Floor came up on my Spotify and just briefly gave me an interlude there, which sounded like nice outro music.
Add that to my to listen. Frog on the go? What is it?
On the floor. On the floor. Just a weird little bop. Carrie sent it to me. And I was like, that is a fantastic little song. That was great. Fantastic show and tell. Terry Pratchett and Brian Gosling in The Terror of the Sun. What a perfect triptych.
Let's do some plugs before we go. Sarah.
Yeah. Spare and Vent Parts and Other Words for Smoke are available in all good bookstores. I will have news very, very soon regarding future book-shaped objects. I'm still on Twitter. I'm so sorry. I'm still there at Gripsky. And I'm on the Clock app at Sarah Gripsky and Instagram at Sarah Gripsky also. What about you, Al?
I'm @_McGuire everywhere, unless they don't allow underscores on Blue Sky. I don't know. It might be just Alan McGuire on Blue Sky. Who knows? That's where we are now. That's where we're hanging out. It's good. That's all I'm doing. Andrea, what about you?
I have a newsletter, andrea-cleary.ghost.io. It's a
Ghost. Good, excellent.
Like, it's just a great URL to say out loud. very easy to remember. I'm over there. I'm going to write something about this Dead Man's Bones album that'll be out today as you're listening to this, actually. So go read it. I'm on Blue Sky at Andrea Cleary, I think. .something.
We're all there somewhere. Sky, you'll find us.
We're there somewhere. Yeah. And at Andrea Cleary _ on Instagram and on the Nile and Nine podcast weekly. That's me.
Cool. Juvenalia is juvenalia_pod on Twitter, Juvenalia Pod on Instagram. It's not on Blue Sky because that doesn't seem to be the vibe there.
I think it's slot in.
We have Patreon, patreon.com/juvenalia, where we talk about things we started and finished recently. We need to talk about The Bear, season 2.
We really do.
We'll
reconvene.
We'll reconvene.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dean McDonald, for our artwork.
Thank you,
Cassie and Tall Tales for having us.
Love you, Cassie.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. We will see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.